summer of 1975. It was hot, dusty, thunderstorms constantly in the afternoons. I wandered into a radio station, WUNH, 91.3 FM in Durham. Before I knew it, I was behind a microphone playing music by Mike Oldfield, The Grateful Dead, Black Oak Arkansas, The Doobie Brothers. I've always loved music. Ever since I was a child, and I used to listen to WFEA, which was 1370 kilohertz. It was a radio station across the river from where I lived. They played really cool AM pop hits, I guess, when I was a kid. And then I used to play with my father's shortwave Zenith radio, tuning in signals from all over the world. There must be a lot of reasons why I love radio, and I loved it since I was a child. I used to play with walkie-talkies, two-way radios, out in my backyard. I used to hear these voices talking to each other. Red fox, red fox, red fox. One day I said, hello. Hello. And they answered back. Who is this? Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the summer season of Seldom Heard Radio.
Hi, I'm Jack R. Johnson, and this is Hidden Histories. For those who think that the only good government is no government or a highly privatized one, you might want to hear about the so-called Congo Free State, a privately held nation run like any good corporation for maximum profit. On June 3rd, in 1885, Belgian King Leopold II decided to become the sole shareholder and owner of the Association Internationale Africaine, the company that purportedly owned all of the Congo Free State, an area that represented the present Democratic Republic of the Congo. It took a bit of handiwork for Leopold to pull this off. Among other things, he promised that his motives were purely humanitarian. In a carefully worded letter to U.S. President Chester Arthur, he proposed that as an entirely disinterested humanitarian body, the association would administer the Congo for the good of all, handing over power to the locals as soon as they were ready for that grave responsibility. If this sounds similar to our own disastrous invasion of Iraq, the comparison is apt, at least up to a point. But Leopold went beyond merely colonizing the Congo. He set up a system of forced slave labor that brutalized the local population. According to Adam Hochschild, the forced labor system directly and indirectly eliminated about 20% of the population of the Congo. In addition to the brutal working conditions where the natives mined for copper and other minerals, white officials carried out wholesale massacres during rubber collecting expeditions, and hundreds of thousands of Congolese were murdered outright. So grim was the slaughter that Joseph Conrad penned his darkest novel to capture the moral rot at the center of Leopold's private enterprise, Heart of Darkness. Eventually, in 1908, the Belgian government abolished the Congo Free State and annexed the region, governing it as a formal colony. The natives were still colonized, but that governing arrangement was far more kind than the privatized hell that Leopold had created. This is Jack R. Johnson for Hidden Histories.
Welcome to Paper Radio, tuning into paper culture in a digital world. Amateur press associations are a way for geographically distant groups of people to discuss common interests together in a specific forum. Many amateur press associations, or APAs, were founded in the 1930s by fans of science fiction, comics, music, cinema, and other topics as a way to develop writing, design, and illustration skills. Many professional journalists, creative writers, and artists began as members of APAs, and some still participate. A central mailer or official editor is the coordinator of an APA. The heart of the role is the distribution of the association's publications to its members. I'll be sharing more info about APAs in future editions of Paper Radio. I'm DJ Frederick. Thanks for listening. Celebrating 50 years of the radio underground, this is DJ Frederick with Seldom Heard Radio, music and culture in the spirit of free radio. Steely Dan with Do It Again from the Can't Buy a Thrill LP. Before that, of course, America with Horse with No Name. And we started the program off with an obscure band called The Seventh Dawn from their LP Dreams. We heard We Are. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to Seldom Heard Radio, music and culture in the spirit of free radio here on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London and online at classicalwscs.org, where you can listen around the world on your smartphone, your tablet, your gold fillings, or what have you. What have you?
Born about 20,000 BC, and died May 2003. Well, he had a good run. You're on the Soundbeat.
With his long white beard and a crooked staff, he tramps along while the folks all laugh. The twinkle in his eye, he passes them by. Old Man of the Mountain.
The Old Man of the Mountain was a series of granite slabs on Cannon Mountain in New Hampshire. Viewed from the side, the slabs gave the cumulative effect of a man's face, leading to its other nickname, the Profile. He became the state's unofficial emblem and was immortalized by both Daniel Webster and Nathaniel Hawthorne, the latter of whom called it a work of nature in her mood of majestic playfulness.
I often sigh and wish that I were the old man of the mountain.
Sadly, the old man succumbed to thousands of years of erosion in 2003, and the slabs tumbled to the ground below. You're listening to Old Man of the Mountain by Cab Calloway, a Mellotone record from 1933. The song was used in the 1933 Fleischer cartoon featuring Calloway and Mae Questel as Betty Boop. Want to see it? Go to soundbeat.org right now. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
Why? got the key. Just follow your feeling, you are free. Where have you been? What have you done? What have you seen? Child of the star.
Thank you.
Dave Hamilton with Marriage is Only a State of Vibes. Before that, the G Brothers with Let Me Find the Sun. And we started off with Hallamash and Child of the Sun here on Seldom Heard Radio. This is DJ Frederick doing a freeform journey through the past 50 years or so, an homage to the underground radio stations of the 1960s and early 1970s before the program directors and commercialism took over and really cool radio kind of went, went into a lot of different directions because it didn't go away. There are definitely a lot of cool radio stations and always have been. But, when I was a teenager coming up, you could hear just about all kinds of music everywhere on the radio dial, and it was very, very wonderful. All right, we'll be back right after Pulse of the Planet.
Is global warming a reality? Should we regulate chemicals like DDT? When we face questions like these, do we base our understanding on evidence or opinion? I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet.
People who study this indicate that about 60% of the American voting population doesn't use evidence to come to a conclusion. They have an opinion or a perspective, and they gather the evidence to support their idea.
Geoscientist Barbara Becken.
I had a class project where I asked students to go into the literature and weigh how journalists had interpreted global warming against the way scientists had interpreted evidence for global warming. Because journalists commonly look at bias and try to balance both sides of an argument, they would often give equal weight to the science side of global warming and the opposition side of the global warming issue. Whereas within the scientific literature, that debate has already been argued and settled.
And how fair and balanced is the scientific information that's available to us?
In recent years, there has been an effort to vilify Rachel Carson's work on exposing DDT and its harms to the environment in general. So when students come in and they're confused about whether or not DDT is good or bad, we'll do a quick internet search and ask them to find websites in support of or against DDT. And then we'll look at who sponsors those websites. And they begin to see that the arguments that are presented commonly are biased based on the political or sociological or business take of the website.
Pulse of the Planet is made possible in part by Virginia Tech, inventing the future through a hands-on approach to education and research.
Well, with everything that's happening in the world right now and in our own nation, the United States of America, you would wonder, what has happened to the art of protest and protest music that developed back in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s? Where has it gone? Where are the voices crying in the wilderness? You know, where's the opposition? Well, I recently heard a report on NPR that addresses that very question. So here we are, the present and future of protest music.
Here's another story about changing trends in music. On this 4th of July weekend, we wanted to spend a few minutes looking at a new generation of musicians who are creating music in response to the political climate. CJ Genevi of member station KCUR reports that some of these protest songs can sound very different from what you might expect.
Joe Purdy is 36. With his beard, his flannel, and his troubadour hat, he looks as traditional as he sounds. Purdy says events of the last couple of years forced him to change his songwriting.
I wrote like 13 records full of sad bastard music and love songs, cowboy songs and stuff, which I love. But the last record I did that I made last year was the first one that I'd ever done that was a true civil rights social justice record.
Purdy happened to be in Ferguson a couple of days after Michael Brown was shot, and he ended up singing at a benefit concert. In the weeks and months that followed, his songs became more pointed. He says his goal is to get his message across without half his audience walking out.
I grew up in Arkansas, and I'm a hillbilly, and I kind of felt like I was the right person for the job because why I may not agree with the politics of a lot of the folks that I grew up with. I know them well, and I know they all have good hearts.
But young roots musicians aren't just wearing denim and plaid. Their protest music can be electric. It can also be electronic.
I won't be afraid. No, I won't. I won't be afraid. No, I won't. I won't be afraid. Lay me down in the shade.
Iskwe is a 36-year-old Cree singer from Winnipeg. She knows her music sounds more like what you'd hear in a dance club, but for her, it's still folk music, as in music of the folk, of the people.
Partly because I'm Indigenous, and so the content that I speak on is rooted in things that are happening in my culture and in my community, but also more global issues like the environment, so with things like pipelines and caring for our earth and our waters.
And because the issues are so broad, the music is wide open.
Because I think that protest has so many faces, and it has so many reasons and rationales, and it has so many people standing behind it that I don't think there's ever going to be one particular sound.
Not so, says Heather May of Washington, D.C., who has strong ideas about future protest music.
It's going to be pop, because young people, 16, 17, 18, 12, listen to pop music. Yes, they love underground music, but they love what's on the radio.
I've spent too many decades hiding neath the covers, covering up my curves, clothe myself in black. But this body wants some glitter, this body wants a night. Gonna put my hands up, cause I am enough, I am enough, I am enough.
May is 28. And describes herself as a plus-sized lady-loving lady. She has no use for old-fashioned stereotypes about what a protest singer should look like.
You can't stand with an acoustic guitar and long hair and a flower in your hair and get people to notice you. Not right now. But you can stand with a piano and 5-inch heels with a backing band and makeup and glitter and body positive and sing nice and loud pop music that makes them dance and then also makes them think.
No matter what the music sounds like, the issues it tackles will be global. Artists and audiences can reach each other all over the world now, instantly, online. For his latest project, the Norwegian musician Madi recorded other people's songs, songs that have been censored over decades and across borders, like this one from Israel.
Learning to kill is a matter of habit. The more you've done it, the better you're at it.
Madi says it seemed as if protest music had died in his native Norway, so he wanted his project to honor musicians who've never stopped speaking out.
Even though it may feel like it for us folk musicians that protest music has disappeared, it hasn't. It has just shifted, taken different forms, and exists in different places today.
So protest singers in the United States might have some catching up to do, but some are probably laying down tracks as we speak. For NPR News, I'm CJ Janovy in Kansas.
Thank you. ask for something like another chance. A something similar as this. Don't worry too much, it'll happen to you.
Thank you.
Well, this has been program number 802 of Seldom Heard Radio, music and culture in the spirit of free radio. I'm DJ Frederick saying thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for embracing the medium of radio. We've come a long way from vacuum tubes to smartphones. We will always be inventing new forms of media. That's the fun of it. Creating and listening and learning. All right, this is WSCS 90.9 FM in New London, and I'll be back very soon with another edition of Seldom Heard Radio.